Audiobook of the online version of the Marcia's book. The Ideal Food, Book Number 5. Martinus Institute 1981. First Danish Book Edition 1942, first published in the Danish magazine Cosmos 1933-34. Chapter 1. The terrestrial human being's senses of nutrition are distorted. Among the great rapidly developing problems is the question of what is the ideal food. It has long been a fact for the developed spiritual researcher that mankind is undergoing an evolution, ascending from a primitive, coarse animal state to a more perfect or refined form of existence. It is likewise also a fact for this researcher that the more refined an organism is, the finer the sustenance or nourishment this organism must have. While the primitive human being can eat almost unconstrainedly from a dustbin or consume putrefied and stinking products, the refined, civilized human being can consume only so-called fresh products produced, preferably untouched by human hands, under the most refined hygienic processes. However, it has to be pointed out that the evolution of the latter being's senses of nutrition, which in this case means the organs of taste in particular, are still far from being able to keep pace with the rest of its evolutionary state. The purpose of the senses of nutrition is to produce natural hunger and natural thirst. By natural hunger and thirst must here be understood a healthily or naturally appropriate desire for those particular substances the organism must absorb and assimilate for its fully healthy maintenance. The countless instances of organic illness and considerable suffering that the civilized human being endures are a proof that the senses of nutrition of this being do not create a completely natural hunger and thirst but, on the contrary, to a great extent promote hunger for unnatural sources of nourishment and unnatural stimulants. From a cosmic point of view, only a very small percentage of civilized people are absolutely healthy. But here other circumstances must also be taken into consideration, such as their relation to climate, exercise, sleep, fresh air, light, cleanliness and clothing. One's appetite for these realities must also be healthy, if not it is no use that the food is healthy. So it is no use if a human being consumes healthy food while living constantly in bad air and light or while wearing clothes that are far too thin, just as it is equally no use his living in fresh air and a healthy climate, and wearing good, warm clothes and so on while constantly taking into his organism unnatural substances in the form of food. Originally, every living being is equipped with organs that develop normal hunger and thirst or normal appetite for food that is absolutely natural for the organism, or for the fulfillment of the particular special conditions upon which its absolutely healthy existence is based. Generally, in the animals, these organs and this consciousness of nutrition are still in their purest form, protecting them almost 100% against errors in ways of living or to a corresponding degree bringing about the fact that only those forms of consumption and ways of living can be felt as pleasant that are absolutely normal for the evolutionary standard of the beings in question. Something quite different is the case for those beings we usually call human beings, but who, according to Livetsbog, the Book of Life, are not completely evolved as such, and therefore to a certain extent still belong to the animal kingdom. The senses of nutrition of these beings are, to the very highest degree, distorted, degenerated and unreliable. This in turn means that the beings in question can sometimes have a very strong hunger or even a very strong desire for more or less unnatural substances, indeed, sometimes to such a degree that these in many cases become their daily food and drink. Since unnatural substances, which means substances whose actual food content demands for its extraction far too great an expenditure of energy on the part of the organism, are virtually indigestible by the human organism and are almost entirely without food value, just as they of course also sometimes represents an output of energy that is far too strong in relation to the organism and therefore shake it to its foundation, these unnatural substances become pure poison for this organism. It is a matter of course that when the senses of nutrition or organs of taste of terrestrial man are so poorly stabilized that they can sometimes dictate a daily or constant consumption of such poisonous substances, the organisms of these beings become to a corresponding extent sick, abnormal or miserable in appearance. Chapter 2. When the individual has neither the instinct nor the intelligence to choose the absolutely perfect food as for terrestrial human beings, they have, through religions, wisdom and science together with the other phenomena of life itself in the last few centuries, gone through a rapidly accelerating process of evolution. This has in particular caused an outstanding development of intelligence in the individuals. This development of intelligence has widened their sensory horizon and given them mastery over forces or realities of which they had previously no notion. As this new mastery is, of course, the same as an increase of so-called free will, this free will of the human being has thus been raised a little above the ordinary, habitual, primitive animal form of free will. While this latter form of will is largely directed by an aptitude for instinct, the former form has now to a great extent gone over to being directed by an aptitude for intelligence. The terrestrial human being has thus to a certain extent raised himself above the ordinary animal kingdom by the conquering of extensive new spiritual or mental terrains. But to the same extent as the human being has in this way come into new spiritual areas, using intelligence instead of instinct, instinct of course degenerates, for it is an unbreakable law of nature that those parts of an organism, such as organs, limbs, senses and so on, that are not used, finally become unusable and degenerate, to be completely dissolved at last through various following incarnations, and disappear, so they can be maintained absolutely only by being used. Since the animal's preeminent and developed instinct is thus degenerated in the human being, and this instinct was the basis for the ability to feel absolutely normal hunger and thirst, the terrestrial human being's ability to feel this is thus to a corresponding degree degenerated. If the terrestrial human being's organism had not been refined at the same time as he evolved out of the animal kingdom but had, on the contrary, continued to be equally robust, enabling him to consume the usual coarse animal food, then his habitual consciousness would have been able to save him, for there would not then have been any change in his way of living. But the organism is, as previously mentioned, refined, and correspondingly refined substances are demanded for its maintenance or existence. But, as the terrestrial human being in his evolution has thus come into areas where his organism can no longer tolerate to the same degree as before the old animal food but demands new and refined products for its nourishment, and as his instinct in these new areas is in a degenerated condition, so this instinct can no longer guarantee the individual's desire for or choice of the right food as in the old areas. And the individual must then with his intelligence seek to arrive at an understanding of which foodstuffs are the right ones for his organism's present step in evolution. But since nothing in the organism can be born fully grown but can become usable only through a gradual development, so intelligence too cannot be born fully grown but must be developed. Since intelligence can be developed only through experiences, so the terrestrial human being must, in those areas where he has lifted himself beyond being led by the old animal instincts, learn from experience the true realities. But experience arises on the basis of error, so the terrestrial human being finds himself in a zone of evolution where he, precisely because of his failing instinct and his as yet lacking intelligence, makes an immeasurable number of mistakes. By virtue of his developed free will he can choose what he wants to eat and drink, but he has neither the instinct nor the intelligence to choose the absolutely perfect food or that food which is absolutely appropriate for his organism's evolutionary step. He therefore, to an exceptionally great extent, comes not only to choose foodstuffs that can only in a general sense be said to be foodstuffs but he even chooses realities that are absolutely not foodstuffs. Now, to take into an organism foodstuffs that are not appropriate to this organism creates disharmony in it. As disharmony in an organism can elicit only illness or pain, It is understandable that this has given rise, within terrestrial mankind, to such realities as medicine men, quacks, wise men and wise women, faith healers and doctors, all of whom constitute more or less successful repairers of undermined and overburdened organisms. Furthermore, it is the same circumstances that cause distressed mankind to cling to the innumerable patent medicines that flourish so prolifically, or to all kinds of powders and liquids, if only they have the label medicine stuck on them, quite regardless of how dangerous and undermining for the organism they are, according to cosmic analysis. Anesthetics, which certainly relieve temporary pain but thereby in reality undermine the organism's recognition of the presence of these poisonous substances in the organism and its struggle or resistance to them, have likewise been discovered or invented. It is a matter of course that a form of life or existence that in the shape of unnatural food and drink so promotes a continuous accumulation of poisons within the organism and furthermore as medicine promotes another accumulation of poisons, which perhaps in certain cases can remedy the effects of the former, but on the other hand in many cases leave behind quite other harmful and incurable effects. Finally undermines even the highest creative power of the individual or the extra referred to in Livetsbog. According to eternal laws of love this undermining will culminate in a catastrophe. This catastrophe is admittedly terrible in itself, and appears as the very highest or most radical experience that exists, but, on the other hand, precisely by virtue of its strong effect, it stops total undermining and thereby brings the individual back to what is normal or natural with the will and the power never more within the present spiral of evolution to depart from the normal or divine ways within the area of nutrition. This catastrophe is thus elicited through the individual's having for a while completely lost his creative power and, in the worst cases, in many incarnations being thereby completely unable to create a perfect or normal physical body. He must therefore in such periods appear on the physical plane as a person whom we term mentally handicapped. Here we must bear in mind that, according to Livetsbog, the present physical appearance of the individual is determined by three sets of heredity in the form of innate talents or natural capacities, namely his own talents from a previous existence, and the talents or natural capacities of his father and mother, which to a certain extent are present in his physical body. While the natural capacities or tendencies of the father and mother to a certain extent dominate the individual during childhood, thereafter to decline up to the age of 30, then the individual's own heredity or innate tendencies from a previous existence dominate his body from that age until and beyond death. And it is this inheritance from a previous existence that determines the normality of the individual's present physical incarnation. But this problem is too vast to be elucidated here, and for the study of this I must therefore refer the reader to my main work, Livetsbog. Chapter 3 Aspirants to Future Abnormal Incarnations or Existences. So terrestrial people find themselves in a zone where they struggle with illnesses and sufferings based on their unfortunate choice of stimulants and sources of nutrition. This struggle is so dominant and the food consciousness so erroneous for a vast number of people that it is already now evident to cosmic consciousness that the beings concerned are well on the way to losing their normality or ability to create perfect bodies in their next incarnations, and therefore in these incarnations will be comparable to those beings who today fill our homes for the mentally handicapped, mental hospitals and hospitals. Such aspirants to future more or less abnormal incarnations or existences based on an erroneous food consciousness are identical with those who in daily existence appear as weak-willed morphine addicts, alcoholics, smokers and so on. Those stimulants that bring the beings into these categories are all, without exception, realities that are pure poison for the organism and that are accumulated in this organism only because of an emerging or habitual hunger or thirst that is quite unnatural, since these substances have nothing whatsoever to do with nutrition. In their absolute purest forms, they are totally alien to the organism. As substance is in reality the same as power or energy, and energy in turn creates movement or vibration. None of these alien substances or energies can be introduced into an organism without creating corresponding movement or vibration. It is this vibration that is the basis for taste. If substance were not concentrated vibration, one would never be able to be taste or smell it. When something tastes sour or sweet, this particular taste is only an expression of the reaction between the vibration of the substance and the vibration of the substance in our tongue or organs of taste. In the same way, it is the reaction between the vibration of the substance and the vibration of the substance in our organs of smell that is identical with what we call the scent or smell of the substance. The continuous introduction of alien substances into an organism means the same as a maintenance of an unfolding of alien energy in this organism. But such an unfolding of alien energy can spell only trouble for the organism's normal and necessary unfolding of energy, since it cannot exist in the organism without resisting or restraining the normal functions of the organism. So the reaction arising between the normal energy and the alien energy cannot mean anything but disharmony for the organism. It is such disharmony we call illness. When the alien energy is stronger than the normal energy and completely overcomes it, the physical body perishes and death occurs. Through death, or life in the spiritual world, the individual, by virtue of X2 or his principle of creation, acquires the ability to incarnate or be born in a new physical body. But just as he has, by faulty ways of living, undermined or worked against his principle of creation, to that same extent will the above-mentioned ability be lacking. And the individual will then, as previously mentioned, to a corresponding extent come to appear as abnormal or ill in his new physical existence. Through these dark lives or profound experiences, however, the eye is again led back to the light, but in a new, transfigured form. Chapter 4: Why the terrestrial human being eats mainly coarse animal food, while the stimulants described here are all without exception in reality not food, and have therefore nothing to do with nutrition. It cannot be denied that the stimulants I will now mention to a certain extent really are food, but not only to a certain extent. They belong to that form of food suited to organisms of lower or more robust and primitive natures than the human. In other words, they are foods from which the terrestrial human being has in reality more and more grown away, to a great extent without knowing it. The numerous abnormal states brought about by these foods have, however, given rise to the beginnings of a rapidly accelerating development of the individual's food consciousness or tendencies to desire more refined food, more appropriate and natural to their advanced organism and elevated spiritual mentality. So the foods from which terrestrial human beings have grown away, and to which they are therefore beginning to take a dislike, cannot be regarded as normal for these beings, since they are also, to a certain extent, a manifestation of alien energies extraneous to large parts of the organism. Such foods include meat, pork, fat, lard, fish, lobsters, crabs, shrimps, snails, mussels and the like. These foods are suited only to beings with coarse and robust organisms such as lions, tigers, hyenas, dogs and cats. To the same extent as the evolutionary step of the terrestrial human being lies above the steps or stages of such beings, these food products will be unnatural food. If people nevertheless to a great extent consume these products as daily food, it is an expression of the fact that their food consciousness and taste organs have not been able to keep pace with the evolution of the other parts of their organisms. These taste organs do not yet therefore cause the hunger or thirst proper to people's advanced step, or the normal desire for those food products suited to that step. In other words, the nature of the particular taste of these products is still not so pleasant or habitual for them as to outdistance the taste of the above-mentioned animal substances. Curiously enough, one therefore finds that people today choose the coarse animal foods or meats, which are in reality, as sources of nutrition, too far below that step for foods which, for the cosmic or occult sight, proves to be the proper one for the organism of the advanced terrestrial human being. So present terrestrial mankind, which is otherwise to a very great extent modern or up-to-date, is thus within the area of nutrition in reality out of date or old-fashioned. The same being, not only within spiritual areas but also within the areas of nutrition, must be said to be, in the words of the Bible, the prodigal son who eats with the swine. Indeed, he not only eats the above-mentioned primitive products, which he seriously considers necessary for the maintenance of life, but he has at times even turned this eating or the satisfaction of this unnatural hunger into the core of every form of recreation. So, in these cases, he lives in order to eat, while he in reality should eat only in order to live. Since all the above-mentioned animal products are taken from the organisms of beings that have been killed, they must of necessity be termed corpse substances. And every form of consumption of these is therefore identical with the eating of corpses, and can as such belong, of course, only to a primitive animal nature and absolutely not to a higher form of human culture or existence. But let me here hasten to say that I of course do not put forward the present analyses in order to attack any meat eater, butcher, hunter or fisherman. On the contrary, I think that the relation of every individual to the above-mentioned problems must be decided by himself, in accordance with his spiritual attitude, abilities and development, and not by me or by others. When I put forward these analyses, it is because the question of nutrition is for mankind of such a serious nature that none of its individuals can become really healthy or have an existence really free of illness before it comes into contact with that source of nutrition which, absolutely without existing on the basis of murder and dismemberment, in accordance with eternal laws, is suited to the step in evolution of the advanced human being. I will therefore in this book show the evolution of the presence of such a source of nutrition on the earth, at the same time giving an overview of how the above-mentioned animal foods or products, besides meaning killing or dismemberment for the beings from whose organisms they are taken, also mean murder and suicide for the human beings who take them into their organisms as nourishment, and who are thus in conflict with the very law of existence or the eternal commandment thou shalt not kill. Chapter 5 The Fifth Commandment and the Blood and Meat-Eating Human Being. As mentioned in the previous chapter, animals do not provide the correct food for the human being. Since the terrestrial human being is a transitional being between the animal kingdom and the human kingdom, the particular, special natures of these two kingdoms will each be more or less represented in the manifestation of the said being. It is, of course, mainly the former kingdom that dominates, since the physical body of the individual is still an animal body. The terrestrial human being is a mammal. His whole system of fertilization and reproduction is subject entirely to the laws of the animal kingdom. The finished or perfect human being is not at all subject to these laws but appears in a quite different, liberated, independent system of maintenance, which, however, I cannot explain here. Yet it is towards this completely developed human being or godlike human being that the higher nature in the terrestrial human being is aspiring. Since the animal nature is the oldest or the most familiar, its manifestation has long since been transferred to the consciousness of the individual as firmly ingrained habits or tendencies. This in turn means that it demands no particular effort of will for its manifestation. It appears or is elicited quite automatically. Something quite different is true of the human nature in the individual. As it is of relatively recent date, it has only to a very small extent become habitual consciousness and is actually released only by an effort of will. It is thus for the great majority of people considerably easier to retort to an insult, easier to live for one's own advantage than for the advantage of one's fellow beings, easier to lose one's temper or become angry than it is to elicit the opposite form of manifestation. This latter form, which means turning the right cheek when one is smitten on the left, occurs only to a very small extent as a natural ability. It must in the great majority of people be enforced by willpower. Everything that comes under the term love stimulates this willpower. This love, in the forms of religion, idealism, morality and so on, influences people, contributing to the development of this willpower in every single individual on the basis of his sufferings and the ensuing beginnings of the development of feeling, gradually transforming the individual from animal to human being. This in turn means that the terrestrial human being is more and more breaking the habit of revenging, killing and dismembering. Since most forms of religion and morality have attached far more importance to the intellectual and mental life of the individual, and to his behavior towards his fellow humans, than to his physical organism itself, his nutrition or food, his relation to animals, this latter side of his conscious mental life is, as previously mentioned, still lagging very far behind in evolution compared to the rest of his condition. This in turn is reflected in the fact that terrestrial mankind in the above-mentioned less developed fields of consciousness is living in almost incredible excess, under the effects of which, in the form of chronic illnesses and immense sufferings, it is today sighing and groaning. Through the new spiritual or cosmic world impulse, which is at present sweeping the earth, and from which, according to Levitsburg, a perfect spiritual science, a purer and higher idealism, morality or culture than the present one will be created, terrestrial mankind's nutrition consciousness will likewise be perfected. So one will now far more than before attach importance to the fifth commandment. Terrestrial mankind has now advanced so far forward in evolution that it literally cannot get any further until it has learned to respect and properly to observe this commandment. Since the effects of every form of action sooner or later in the eternal existence of their source will return to this source, manifesting themselves as killing, mutilating or caressing and edifying, on the same scale as they were elicited by the individual, so no individual can attain to an absolutely perfect fate or become free of mutilating or killing energies as long as he himself is still the source of such and is, by virtue of this, tied to the home or plane of existence of these dark energies. One will thus come to revise one's understanding of the above-mentioned divine commandment. It does not, as we know, read, "Thou shalt not kill people," but states purely and simply, "Thou shalt not kill," thus implying absolutely no form of exception whatsoever. But people have not respected this commandment to the full and have, by virtue of their still undeveloped feeling and habitual animal desire for the consumption of blood and meat, made animals an exception. They slaughter, kill and mutilate them, indeed, in almost a darker form than even the beasts of prey. From these beasts of prey every animal has at least a chance to flee. They are as a rule overpowered only through their own lack of caution. But this is not the situation for the animals in relation to the human being, since this being has multiplied his capabilities as a beast of prey with extensive technical aids including long-range firearms, traps and the like. But what is an even more ingenious manifestation of a beast of prey consciousness is the artificial breeding and rearing of animals. Here the animals are already captured and sentenced to death before they are born, indeed, even before they are conceived. Here there is no possible chance of fleeing. The little baby animals are entirely within the power of their murderers from birth, everything in their existence being based solely upon their becoming either the best possible beasts of burden or steaks. Here the beast of prey has thus gained the power and the ability to slough off his real skin, appearing almost in the form of an angel as a friend and protector of the animal in order later, when a suitable opportunity has arisen, without any sort of mercy or compassion, to hand it over to slavery, slaughter or mutilation. In this way the human being deprives such an animal or living being of a smaller or greater part of its physical lifetime, sometimes many years, merely so its organism may become a meal. In truth, such a form of manifestation or existence belongs to the consciousness of those beings who are at the blood and meat hungering stage of the animal and who have still not to any degree felt the flame of universal love through their veins and who are unable to any significant extent within the given field to use the divine power we call thinking. Blood and meat-eating human beings have thus a side to their nature that they have not yet managed to lift up into the zone of thinking and love where they are otherwise in reality situated, and which is the reason they can adorn themselves with the name human being. And it is this permanent blood and meat eating that darkens the existence of the terrestrial human being, since the sun of love cannot possibly shine where the human being is devoid of all respect for the living being's right to life, having made it a pleasure to exist on the death and mutilation of other beings.